This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 38, where we're going to talk about platform as a service versus infrastructure as a service. Recorded July the 9th, 2014. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. All right, good morning, AC. How are things?
Doing really good. How are you doing this morning, CJ?
Very well, thank you. Not bad at all. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Seattle.
It's the same here in Florida, except it is hot as hell. I went out for a run this morning, and it took a good 30 minutes to cool down. Somebody in my neighborhood put a picture up from the weather report last night from one of the local news stations that said the heat index in our area is supposed to be in the ballpark of 124.
Ouch.
Yeah. I wrote back and I said, I believe, and he showed like eight different temperature things on the map. It was a screenshot from the news. And I think my comment was, I believe that's eight different temperatures that say, and I'm not going to use the words, I'm going to clean it up a bit, but F that S degrees.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to halve that and it would feel a bit cooler.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So anyway,
Crikey.
Hey, did you watch any of the stuff yesterday? I guess so. We're recording this the day after, but did you watch any of the stuff yesterday from the Brazil Germany game?
I watched the highlights, which was pretty much, you know, every minute of the game.
Did you look at any of the stuff that was going on like Twitter and Facebook and everything?
I was flat out yesterday. I didn't get a chance to watch the game, but somebody told me the score, and I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" The funny thing is, we have a German woman staying with us at the moment, and so we were talking about the game earlier on in the day, and then I came home from work, and we were talking, and she was just like, "This is awesome."
you want to sit there and laugh hysterically is on Facebook, go find the comedian Ricky Gervais and go look at some of the comments he had. But more importantly, go look at the responses and the comments that people had to his thread. You've got some stuff is incredibly off color and politically incorrect. But some of them were, it's just some people are like saying, well, I haven't seen Germany this dominant since. Well, we won't go there.
Ow!
Another one said, "Thank God." Somebody said something about, you know, thank goodness that Jeremy isn't as effective at waging war as they are at the World Cup. And I was like, God, these things are going way over the top. But I mean, you know, if you take it for the grain of salt, we all know what happened. It's all history. But
yeah. Nice. So, today we are going to talk about platform as a service versus infrastructure as a service. So why don't we just kick off by sort of setting the scene on what these things are for those who haven't heard of these terms before. Do you want to tackle platform as a service or PaaS, and I'll describe IaaS or IaaS?
Sure. So platform as a service, or another way you said it's PaaS and pronounced PaaS. This is essentially, you know, you're building stuff in the cloud, but you're building it on a platform that has given you a bunch of different, think of them as like Tinker Toys, or think of them as different tools and services and stuff. And so you're building your website or you're building your application, whatever it is in the cloud, and you're leveraging some of these different Tinker Toys and components within your app. So for instance, we've got, if you look at the Azure space, you've got things like, you know, Azure, you know, websites, and you've got service queues and those, or service bus and those things. You're building an application that needs these different, that is going to use these different services and be in a very loosely coupled architecture.
Gotcha. So IaaS, on the sort of the flip side of this, is effectively much like building a set of servers and virtual machines and networks as you would on-prem, but in the cloud, right? So I think of it as like rather than you hosting it on a set of servers or virtual machines, that you're asking somebody else to do that for you, like Amazon or Azure are two big examples here, or Rackspace, right, as well, where you have to go and set up your virtual machines, you have to configure the networking, you pick the virtual machine sizes, you know, memory and cores and all of that sort of stuff, how you want the networking to fit, how you want the IP addresses to work, all of those sorts of things. And in many ways, a lot of it is either done via scripting or drag and drop via some sort of web interface. You know, like I want a virtual machine of this size on this virtual network, and I want another virtual machine over here and talking to that network. And much of it is easy configuration, but it is pretty much the same at the end of the day as configuring a whole bunch of virtual machines on a server on your own premises, except you're asking somebody else to do it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Makes sense?
Makes sense. Yeah, so it totally makes sense to me. And one of the things, one of the reasons we're doing this topic, I know that for me, it's been something that I've wanted to talk about for a while. I've got a blog post that should be live by the time this this episode goes live on the Curb blog. I'll link to it from my blog and we'll have it in the show notes. But there's a podcast that that I listen to that I subscribe to. I think you listen to it as well. It's called Startups for the Rest of Us. The premise behind it is all about being an entrepreneur and starting up a small business and stuff like that, and all those sorts of things. They had an episode recently. It was episode 184, where they started talking about the benefits of how you're going to stand up and get a new business up off the ground, new software business off the ground. And both of the hosts were seemed to be take much more of a side on the IaaS piece, and really kind of ignore, they didn't dismiss it, but they really ignored the PaaS side. So I left a comment on the show. Again, I'll have a link to it in the show notes. And just giving my two cents on it. And then they came back in the following episode 185, and they I don't want to say they dismissed my comment, but you could tell that they are definitely more in the IaaS camp and less in the PaaS camp. So I feel very strongly about this. I know you do as well, because we both listened to that episode and we talked about it. So throughout this episode, I hope to, you know, we'll be able to share some of those thoughts as well I have in the blog post. So I'm really looking forward to the rest of this discussion.
Yeah, no, that sounds, as we go through, we'll try and address some of the comments they made.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Cool. So why don't we, the way we thought we could do this is by stepping through a few sort of high level points, sort of four or five high level points on the different sorts of areas of difference between IaaS and PaaS. So why don't we kick that off with point number one that we have noted here, which is all about control, right? So when we talk about control with IaaS and PaaS and what some of the differences are, it really boils down to the level of granularity of control and depth that you can get to with each of the different options. So for example, what I mean by this is in IaaS, you've got a virtual machine running in the cloud. You can remote into it using RDP or whatever. And then you've got pretty much the exact same control you would have as you would with a virtual machine on premises. That means you can get into the registry. That means you can muck around with custom software you want to install on that virtual machine, whether it be sort of, I don't know, some sort of network tracing tool, or whether it be like a screenshot tool or anything you really want, you can install so long as it runs on that particular platform, right? It could be a Windows VM or it could be a Linux VM or what have you. But the point here is that you have the same level of control in the VM that you would as if it was running right next to you in a machine on your desk or what have you. Whereas PaaS, on the other hand, that is a higher level application abstraction layer, so to speak. So you load your application up into your PaaS provider and they take care of running your app, but it means that you don't get access to some of the things like the registry and being able to install custom software necessarily in that application or in the location where it runs.
Yeah, and you know, the control piece too, one of the ways I like to look at it is it's really, think about not just about the access you have, but think about the control you have over the environment configuration. So it's things like, you know, I can choose the certain number of virtual cores that I want, virtual CPUs. I can choose how much RAM that I want to allocate to it. I can choose the networking setup. How many different networks do I want to have connected to this virtual machine? And do I want to put this virtual machine on a virtual VPN or a separate subnet that I want to extend to my on-premises network and stuff? So you have a lot of controls over those things. There's advantages and disadvantages to all of this. You know, if you're taking an application, or your goal is to, let's say, take some legacy stuff, and you want to move it from your physical or on-prem virtual machines, and you want to lift it and put it in the cloud, I think IaaS is going to be your best option there. It's going to be your simplest option because it's going to be so close to what you are currently doing. You have control over a machine. The application doesn't know that it's now in the cloud. It just thinks it's still running on a machine. And anything that you had to do to install specific license keys and the registry or any of that kind of stuff for different components, it's going to be easier in IaaS. But on the flip side of that, you know, like you said with PaaS, is that sometimes you don't want to have all that control, right? Sometimes you don't need to have all that kind of stuff, and it's extra things you want to deal with. Maybe you're, you know, classic DevOps kind of role, and you're more on the developer side, and you just need to get the application up and running and working. You don't want to have all that different configuration stuff.
Yeah, with great power comes great responsibility, right?
Yeah.
And so even though you've got access to all those little tweaks and levers and knobs that you can twiddle around with inside your virtual machines, with that comes a responsibility of setting it up right and making sure you've done it correctly. And what happens when you're load balancing across multiple VMs? Now you've got to deal with making sure the configuration is the same on each of them, so that they're all compatible. And also making sure you're staying secure, right? You can fiddle around with virtual machines and turn things on and off that mean that you're not following security best practices, for example, or that you're making your virtual machines vulnerable to attack.
Yeah, that's actually going to touch on another one of the points that we want to cover a little bit later, I think. Or I guess we can do that one now. You want to do the maintenance one now?
Yeah, let's move on.
So
point number two.
Point number two is maintenance, right? So with IaaS, you're going to have a lot more capability in terms of the maintenance. A lot more, I shouldn't say just capability. It's you have a lot more responsibility. And we can look at this in a couple different ways. You know, you're responsible for the patching. You're responsible for the firewall management and poking holes and making sure it's turned on and all that kind of stuff. You're also responsible for all the security, the antivirus stuff and everything that's running inside of your VM, because you're really responsible for that virtual machine. You have to feed it, you have to water it, you have to maintain it, make sure it gets its sleep and all that kind of stuff. The difference is with PaaS is that you don't have a lot of maintenance that you have to deal with on the PaaS side. That's part of you don't want to just get out of the infrastructure and the hardware piece of it. You want to get out of the maintenance side of it. And so you have a much lower maintenance cost. You let someone else just saying, look, I don't care what version of Windows or Linux or whatever else I'm running. I don't care what this is running on. I'm giving you let's just hypothetical example. I'm giving you a website that's a ASP.NET or a Node or a PHP website. I don't care what you're using to host it. You just said that you could host a website that's of this spec. So you figure it out and you get the whole thing working.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, although that sort of comes back a little bit to the control point where you know, you could choose what AV you put on there, you can choose when you patch and all that sort of stuff. But the flip side of that is that the drawbacks that I see predominantly on the IaaS side versus the PaaS side, then it's all your responsibility, right? You have to remember every month or every couple of weeks or whatever, or even every day, you know, if there's a 0-day vulnerability and there's a patch that comes out for it, you're on the hook for going in and patching and doing the maintenance required to stay secure. So you have to be really on top of that stuff. Other things that I've noticed or that I think about with this are, you know, things like patching. When it's PaaS, in the Azure case, Microsoft take that responsibility on. So even though your app is likely running on a virtual machine or some sort of virtual infrastructure underneath the covers that you don't know about, Microsoft take the responsibility for making sure that they maintain that runtime, so to speak. And then if you set it up right in Azure and you say, I want multiple instances and that sort of thing, then the maintenance downtime is very low to zero, right? So from time to time, Microsoft might need to come through and recycle your app due to maintenance or maintenance windows. But if you've got multiple of them running, then they'll do it in a certain order that means that your application stays up the whole time. So they'll take the first instance down, refresh it, bring it back up, take the second instance down, refresh it, bring it back up. whereas in virtual machine mode, some of that might be your responsibility. After you're patching, you've got to deal with the rotation and downtime and making sure that you're going to fail over stuff between virtual machines and do traffic management and things.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at all of this stuff. I mean, this kind of goes across all of our topics, but you have to look at it, or the way I like to explain it to people is that, you know, let's look at, you know, 10 years ago when we were building applications, or we had applications that were running on our own hardware and our own servers. When you move from that level, the next level up to me is IaaS, which is, I don't want to deal with hard drives. I don't want to deal with physical CPU processors. I don't want to deal with the power. I don't want to deal with the case. I don't want to deal with the networking cables. IaaS just says, you got out of the hardware piece of it. You still get to do all the configuration stuff, but you got out of the physical hardware piece to it. The next step up is going to be like a PaaS, and that says, now you got out of actually managing that box itself from the configuration piece to it, and you're just managing the different services. It's worth noting that, you know, while we're talking about PaaS and IaaS, some of these different cloud providers, specifically Microsoft Azure, they do have, in my mind, they do have a bit of a middle ground there between the two. That was their first offering, those web and worker roles. And they're still available today, but it's kind of a middle ground where with IaaS, you know, you have to stand up a VM and then install your stuff into the VM. With PaaS, if it's a website, they already have pre-commissioned or pre-provisioned stuff and your code just gets deployed. With a web or a worker role, what they're doing is they're actually spinning up a pre-configured VM for you and installing your code into that VM, but that takes an extra, you know, couple minutes or 5 minutes or so to get everything up and running. But you do have the ability to RDP into that role and make some changes. However, Microsoft still maintains like the patching and that kind of stuff of that role for you. So you do have that little bit of middle ground there. It's not, I don't see it being as popular today as it was when it first came out, because you're really going more to the IaaS piece, which is a little bit farther down the ownership, and up a little bit to the PaaS piece, which is a little bit less on the ownership and more just saying, hey, I want somebody else to do all the IT pro stuff for me that they usually do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, web roles in Azure fall into that camp, right, where they were one of the first offerings that came out in Azure, and it is that sort of middle ground. But now they've moved, so the center of gravity seems to have moved to Azure websites, which is more like just a standard web project. You deploy the standard web deploy methods, all that sort of stuff, versus web roles where you had to package it in a certain packaging format and upload it, and Azure would unpack it and deploy it and all that sort of stuff for you. So yeah, that's an interesting point. I sort of think this is analogous to the way I think about computers now. And by that I mean, I know that sounds kind of random, but remember years ago when you used to build your own computer, right? I'm sure lots of our listeners used to go down to the store and do the research on all the components of the computer and all that sort of stuff, right? I used to do this. I used to love it. I used to be able to tell you how much RAM cost, you know, for X many megs of RAM. It was megs at the time, I think. And so I sort of seeing it analogous to my history in that way, in that I used to care about all the components and all of the little pieces of the puzzle to hand build a computer. And then one day came along where I was like, screw that, I'm just going to go buy a computer from Dell or HP or whatever, right? And so I'd just go on and I'd pick the computer, and a pre-canned box thing would turn up and it would work wonderfully for years, and I wouldn't have all these weird component problems, right? And then sort of moving on from that, now I don't even have to worry about ordering a box. I could just say to Azure, I want a VM, and they take care of all of the hardware behind it. I don't even need a physical box turning up. And so I sort of see it analogous to that. Years ago, we used to care about the components, right, of all of the hardware and all that. Then we stepped up a level and said, no, just give me a box to run my thing on. And then we stepped up and said, don't even give me the box.
Yeah.
And so the next step, I think, beyond that is, like, I don't even care about the VM or this virtual box that you've given me. I just care about the app that I'm deploying on it.
Yep.
Right, just the software I'm deploying on it. And then one day, who knows, we're going to get to, I don't even care about the software. I just want to drag and drop a whole lot of things to design, like four sort of, you know, 4GL sort of stuff, right? Where you're like, you're just defining the boxes and how they talk to each other, and you don't actually care how the software is made under the covers.
Yeah, it's
maybe one day we'll get there.
Well, and that's getting closer to, I mean, we're not covering it really in this episode so much, but that's getting more also to the SaaS piece to it, right? You know, it's the software as a service, which is even further abstraction away from the stack, where you're saying, I'm not building anything, I'm just buying a service from someone like a Salesforce and Office 365. But
you know, kind of a good point.
Kind of going what you were just talking about. That brings us up to, I guess, our third point, which was the hosting size. Why don't you take us a little bit through some of the thoughts on hosting differences between these two?
Yeah, so you know, predominantly on this show, we've spoken about Azure and AWS as two providers of these services, right? But there are others as well, like FP Web, we spoke to a few shows ago, Rackspace, we spoke to a few shows ago as well. And so there are lots of different hosting or providers, we should really say, that offer different types of services. Obviously, the big two are AWS and Azure, but each come with different set of choices. So when Azure launched, Microsoft predominantly focused on platform as a service and providing, you know, a place where you upload your app and they run your app. And then over time, they've added IaaS offerings, and it's actually a fairly robust offering now where you can, you know, stand up your virtual machines and then go and deploy your app onto those virtual machines. Whereas AWS has taken the opposite route, and they sort of started on the IaaS end of things and started giving you virtual machines and, you know, with their EC2 offering and so forth. And over time have started adding more platform type capabilities. So they're really, the two have come from quite opposite ends. But you definitely have choices. And there are some pros and cons of whether you go the IaaS or the PaaS route and what hosting choices you have. So for example, if you're doing virtual machines and you're doing it with an IaaS offering, then you can create a Windows VM in AWS or in Azure. But there are differences, right? There are differences in the way you attach storage to them. There's differences in the way you configure the networking and the services around the virtual machines that you have to consider. And it's not just a lift, rip, and replace. So you can't just necessarily take a virtual machine from on-prem and drop it into one of those hosting locations without some considerations for things like networking and memory and storage and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this with the different hosting options, you know, like you said, even though they started out in certain ways, in some ways, some of these providers have kind of stayed true to their roots, and other ways, other ones have kind of changed. So I think, you know, the majority is that we see people like the FP Webs and the Rackspace, those guys are primarily on the IaaS piece, where they're hosting VMs for you, or they're doing a software as a service kind of an offering. The difference here is that, you know, when you look at like an Azure, an AWS, or the third one is really Google that's out there as well. You know, yep. Like you said, AWS started more of an IaaS, and they've added some PaaS offerings, but I still look at Amazon AWS as primarily an IaaS-based offering. They focus primarily on that, and a lot of their load balancing and all that stuff is all focused around hosted virtual machines. On the Microsoft Azure side, you know, like you said, they started out PaaS, but they're constantly making improvements. I'm not saying that AWS is not constantly making improvements, but you see a rapid feature and improvements and additions in both the PaaS and the IaaS side. When you look at the Google Cloud, now granted, a Google Cloud is relatively new compared to these two other offerings. They do have an IaaS offering, but they do seem to go much more in the PaaS side than they do on the IaaS side. I think that, I mean, from my point of view, and I'd love to hear, you know, have some listeners jump in and voice their opinions in the comments on the show, on this episode. But to me, you know, if you're going for IaaS, your option is really anybody that's really out there. They're all going to give you different offerings. If you're going PaaS and you're being more of a developer, you want to do more of development against a cloud platform, to me, it's really going to be Azure as the primary one. Google is an up and comer, and you've also got, you know, you also have AWS, but I don't see AWS really as being so much a PaaS offering. I see it much more as being an IaaS offering.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. There are some others that we're missing out on talking here, like around Heroku for Rails and so forth. And I definitely put that in the PaaS space, right? Because you build your app, you deploy it, they take care of running it, all that. You tell it how you want to scale and all that sort of stuff. But that's definitely in the PaaS space too. Now, one of the interesting points that was mentioned on the Startups for the Rest of Us podcast episode that we spoke about was the sort of this concept of vendor tie-in. So, you know, Rob mentioned on the podcast, you know, like he didn't think PaaS was a great choice because you were sort of tied to a particular vendor. And I honestly think that's a little bit of a hang up on the past of how Azure in particular used to work, right? So if you built a web role and on the PaaS Azure offering, then you were kind of tied mostly in many ways, at least without doing a whole bunch of work, you were tied to Azure because you couldn't just take a web role package and go run it somewhere else, right? It was an Azure specific thing. Mm-hmm. However, you know, in more recent times, with Azure websites and so forth, the apps that you deploy are just regular .NET, Node, PHP web applications. So you could go deploy that to Winhost or Azure or, you know, any cheap ASP.NET hosting provider will take those style of apps. And so then it becomes a question of what services from Azure are you consuming inside your app, whether it's, say, storage or service bus or, you know, or the, you know, in-memory caching or, sorry, out of process caching systems that these providers give you. And so you may have some hookups or tie-ins to those external services that you need to consider when you're moving. But for the most part, you're just deploying a standard web app these days. And so I definitely don't see that sort of same tie-in that Rob talked about on the podcast nearly as much anymore.
Yeah, I remember that when Rob, and we're referring to Rob Walling, one of the co-hosts of the Startups the Rest of Us podcast, and his co-host kind of jumped in on the same thing. He said the same stuff. Mike Tabor was saying, yeah, you tie when you go PaaS, you're really buying into a certain platform. But I mean, to me, this is no different from any kind of when you make architecture decisions on how you're going to build an application, you're going to make things like, am I going with Rails or am I going with ASP.NET? Am I going with a SQL database? Am I going with Mongo? Am I going with Oracle? All of these different decisions that you're going to end up making between the different architecture, including what am I going to be hosted on? Am I going to be on Linux? Am I going to be on Windows? Yeah. Am I going to be on, you know, whatever? All of these different decisions you make, regardless if you're going with a PaaS offering or an IaaS offering, there are other decisions that if you fundamentally decide, you know, 5 months down the road after you've launched your product going, ah, shoot, we screwed up. We need to change our database that we chose here. You've got a massive undertaking. I don't care how you've done it. I don't care what kind of abstraction you've done. You got a massive undertaking. If you decided that you put this on IaaS and you need to move it over to PaaS on the Azure side, or if you decided that you want to go from PaaS on the Microsoft side to the Amazon side, it doesn't matter. You've got massive undertakings. I was really frustrated listening to that part, just saying this just seems like a bit of a, kind of like what you said, it's a bit of a dated argument, but it's a bit of a cop-out too to try and back up. It's a bit of a cop-out reasoning to back up an argument.
Yeah, and I don't think the point he missed for me was this concept that IaaS saves you effort if you do want to move, right? Because I think that's complete BS in that you go try stand up some EC2 instances, right? And it's not just a matter of pushing a button and you get virtual machines, right? Sure, you get virtual machines, but then you've got to roll your software into it and you've got to script your stuff and you've got to connect storage and you've got to do all these setup when you bring on new instances that you can templatize, as I understand it. But, you know, there's still a whole bunch of work you have to do. And that is on Amazon. That's the same on Azure, right? You get your out-of-the-box VM template, you stand it up, then you've probably got config and scripting and stuff to do to configure it just how you want it for your application. Then you got to go deploy your app. I actually think it's easier with PaaS to take my standard ASP.NET web app, which has no vendor-specific stuff inside it, and I could move it from, I've used winhost.com before as a cheap ASP.NET hosting provider. I can FTP and deploy my web application into Winhost without any modifications than if I, you know, and I could deploy it from Azure in the exact same way.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. They've made it easier to do this scripting for IaaS. I mean, on the Microsoft Azure side, we saw stuff that was demoed at the most recent Build conference in San Francisco this year, where they showed some of the improvements and adding things to where you can script using Puppet agents or Chef or whatever. But really, this flexibility you're talking about really brings us into our fourth point, which is flexibility. And this is
flexibility.
This is more around the application, more control over the application stack, not the control we talked about earlier. The cool, you know, when you're going with IaaS and you're looking for flexibility, you really have a lot of flexibility in terms of, number one, where do you want to host? There's a lot more options for you if you're going with IaaS, but you also have a lot of different flavors. I mean, if you've seen the matrix of the different kinds of VMs that you can get from AWS, they're called the Elastic Compute Cloud, EC2. Those different instances, those are the different VMs that Amazon offers. And there's so many different configurations, from super lightweight, small, low-powered machines to very graphics-intensive machines to very fast storage machines. And the same thing over on the Azure side. They don't have as many different options. I tend to prefer the fewer options because it's like going to a restaurant. I don't want to see a menu that's 60 pages long. The Cheesecake Factory menu drives me nuts. I'd rather see one that's about half that size. But that's the IaaS flexibility. With PaaS, I'm going to let you do the PaaS side because I like the way you talk about this.
So I think, you know, you're right that sometimes choice and flexibility is not a good thing. And a good example of that would be if you decide to run your web application using some sort of balked up or hokied up COBOL runtime, right? And so with IaaS, you could run some sort of COBOL runtime that, you know, ran your web application. If you really wanted, you could, you know, some particular port of some particular web framework or runtime or something you could put on there. But with PaaS, you're kind of buying into a number of different standard stacks, right? You're saying, do I want to run on the .NET stack? Do I run on the PHP stack? Do I want to run on the Ruby stack? Do I want to run on all these different sort of open, not necessarily, maybe open's the wrong word, on these standard application stacks? And different hosters provide different options, right? You go look at the hosters, see what application platforms they provide, build your application, then go deploy onto one of those stacks. The good thing about PaaS in this case is that they've configured that stack for the most part, right? So when I'm building an ASP.NET application, I just have to worry about my config settings and web config. I don't have to go worry about the IIS setup inside a virtual machine. I don't have to worry about the firewall stuff on it so much. Yeah, so you don't have to worry about what Microsoft is configuring for you in those apps. You just worry about deploying it. So that it there's definitely pros and cons of each, right? But I think the point here is that with PaaS, a whole lot's been taken care of for you, but you get a little bit less flexibility in the stack that you choose. You have to pick from one of the stacks that the providers offer. One final point on this I would make is that, again, disagreeing with what Rob in particular on the pod show said, was that, you know, I sort of got the feeling like he felt like IaaS was a better choice for people getting into building a startup for the first time or building an app for the first time because of all the flexibility and control that it gave people. However, I honestly think he missed a point here where if you're new to all this, with IaaS, you've got to learn everything. You've got to learn networking. You've got to learn how to deal with virtual machines. You've got to learn how to do patching and maintenance. You've got all that extra overhead that you've got to do. Whereas with PaaS, all you have to do is build your app and deploy it.
I'm just sitting here nodding my head. I felt the exact same way when he was talking about that. I mean, with PaaS, you're building, like, you know, your phrase I've heard you use, it, you know, you're working more a bit on the rails, right? You've given this kind of set of guidelines where you're going to go with. It seems to me PaaS is an easy, if you're building an application from scratch and you're designing it to go work in the cloud, to me, and this gets to the last thing that I wanted to talk about in this episode, which is, you know, when does it make sense, PaaS versus IaaS? We referenced the startups episodes where they were definitely it seemed like they were favoring IaaS in every case, and they were really dismissing the PaaS side, which I have a lot of respect for those guys. That really shocked me. I know it surprised you and a couple other friends that we have that actually that listened to that podcast. They saw the comments. They heard my comments addressed on the air, and they were like, God, I'm right there with you. I'm like, I feel like I'm missing something. I feel like I'm in a different dimension. But to me, when does it make the most sense? If I'm building an application from scratch and it's going to run in the cloud, right? Just like our startup that we're working on, Curb, it's going to be PaaS. I love the ability of how cheap it is. I love the ability to very rapidly scale. I love the fact that everything is so loosely coupled that it's very easy to scale any different component within it. I love the fact that I'm getting new features and new product offerings in the PaaS space, seemingly with Azure, every Sunday, it seems almost, but it just every few weeks. With IaaS, when does IaaS make sense? Well, a lot of cases, I'm trying to lift and replace an application that's currently running on-prem, and I want to get it out of my on-prem environment and put it in the cloud. I'm going to use IaaS. I'm a small business. I'm a small business of one. I run Active Directory in my home office, which I kind of drives me crazy that I do that. But I run Active Directory in my home office for various reasons to make it easier for me to log into stuff. And I'm actually in the process of standing up a VPN, creating a Azure VM that's going to be extended to host Active Directory for me in the cloud and synchronize it with 365. And then I'm even standing up one or two VMs, one for me and actually one for my wife as well, but she actually requested it for a Windows 8.1 VM that whenever I need to, I can just connect in there. I don't have to fire up a VM locally. I've got a VM that'll start up really quick and I can keep working on with in Visual Studio, or I can have anything else that's running up there and fully accessible. And all I need is an internet connection. Same thing with my SharePoint environment. I'm going to use it. SharePoint has to run in a IaaS kind of environment. There is no PaaS offering. It's more of a software as a service, which is what 365 is. But I'm standing up and my Azure development stuff or my SharePoint development stuff is I have a local VM, but my real VM, that's my real workhorse, is a three or four servers that are all going to be running up in Azure. It makes more sense. I have more control over that environment.
Yeah, I kind of go back to my analogy about building computers, right? I sort of see it like that, and also almost like the difference between on-prem and the cloud, right? The old days used to be on-prem, used to have to build stuff. I see IaaS in a similar way. Really, you're just doing it with somebody else hosting it for you. Mm-hmm. Whereas now with cloud and with SaaS, right, you're signing up for a service and you get a set of things you can use, much the same with PaaS, right? You sign up, you deploy your app, you don't have to worry about all the rest of the goo. So I sort of see it very analogous to on-prem versus the cloud. And honestly, I see the future is solely in the PaaS. In the PaaS space.
Well, I'm a little bit of a counterpoint there. I definitely see the future of building applications in the PaaS side.
Yes, good clarification.
I think that there's also a significant and equally significant and important future on the software as a service side, people offering software to us to buy a subscription to, like SharePoint, like Salesforce, like QuickBooks Online, stuff like that. The IaaS piece is always nice to have that going forward. There will be plenty of cases where IaaS is just simply going to make more sense than those other offerings. But I see the more growth, the more opportunity, and really the better service to offer developers and software companies being in the PaaS side, because it offers more flexibility, more control over cost. And you're only going to pay for what you use. Compared with IaaS, you're paying for a lot more than what you use, right?
Right.
Your VMs
right.
are not 100% utilized all the time. And if they are, you need to scale them up so they kind of come down a little bit. And then you've got that extra kind of usage that you're not really taking advantage of.
Right. So I guess in summary, the four points we've covered around the differences between PaaS versus IaaS, or platform as a service versus infrastructure as a service. The first thing we covered was control, about the level of control you get with VMs versus a platform that you just deploy an app to. The second thing was maintenance, around the work that you have to do on AV and patching and managing those virtual machines versus PaaS, where the provider of that platform as a service offering would do that for you. The third thing was around hosting and the choices that you have for each. And some of the options you have around that, with say AWS versus Azure and so forth. And then fourth and finally, flexibility on the stack, about with IaaS being able to choose your stack pretty much from the almost from the middle up versus PaaS, where you're picking a stack and a provider that lets you run that stack. So four good points there, and we'd love to hear viewers' comments about the show, any other questions they've got on IaaS versus PaaS, so please go up to the website and mail us in your questions. The email address is at the end of the show. Thanks again, AC. Been a fun conversation, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.